Parkisaitse. So the first point in Parkisaitse is Rambam in Mona Vuchim, and he speaks about the reason, the limudim that we can have for Yifas Torah. Now Yifas Torah is one of those mitzvahs that the way the Torah gave it was Keneged Yitzhahara. So that means that Be'etzim, the mice itself, is not Ro'oi, and yet there is a framework of mitzvah around it. And that's what the Rambam addresses. Mashakol oisei gamkein zeh sefer din yifas toya. V'yadato oimram. You know that Chazal said l'dibur Torah k'neged yetzer. So that means that the mitzvah itself, we cannot learn from the mitzvah that the act itself is noteworthy, that it's something that is ro'i l'chatchila. But we can learn a lot from it in terms of Midas Tovos and so on. Ve'im ze yesh v'chavdois ha-mitzvah min ha-midas ha-tovos ha-tzor she-snagre mach-subim ma-sha-oyer olam. So I'm going to explain in what in yonim it is that we can learn from it. Ve'hu she'af al-pi she-gova yitzor olam v'lo yuchal lisa lakot yitzor. So the Torah said, yes, this person has reached his limitations of what he could cope with, and he can no longer be coping with the Torah. Still, he has to make it in a quiet, hidden place. It has to be done with a certain modicum of tzmius. So the Rambam, it's a shadow in the Gemara, but the Rambam holds the first time can be b'shas lochama, because that's why Yitzhahara is so powerful. But afterwards, it has to take b'secha, and it has to be after she has quieted down from her stress of having left the home. Ve'monim also meis abul min abechi. You know how to stop her from crying and from mourning. And also she doesn't wash up. In other words, all of these are like forms of velus. She explains why. The people who have avelus find a certain tranquility. It helps calm them down when they cry. Until they sort of their physical kohos weaken and their crying comes to an end. Kesheim shel bala simcha menucha b'mini aschoik. Just like people who are happy find expression and relief in a certain sense in their outer expression. I want to stop a minute and pause to speak about something. The Rambam is telling us in one sentence the inyan of a very important inyan in terms of a person's emotional needs. Expression is a need, and it's something which a person doesn't find calm unless it's expressed. Moshlema davadoma, if you have steam in some sort of pressure cooker and you don't let it out, you're taking the risk that it's going to explode. A person that has emotional upheavals, whose emotions are churning very powerfully, the way that he will find relief is by expressing it. It's one of the misnomers, one of the big mistakes about nichum avelim, that nichum means to go and to make the person laugh so he shouldn't cry. That's not the tachlis of nichum avelim, and it's not nichum. What you want to do is commiserate with the person. You want to help the person express the tsar of his prayer from a beloved one. So the person crying and the person talking about the nifter and what the nifter meant to him is what gives a person nichum. What you want to provide is a very sympathetic ear. Something you appreciate. In other words, if a person talks and there's nobody listening, that's also not expression. If I lock myself in the room and I scream and yell, I don't really find great expression. But if somebody is mekabel what I said, understands it, validates it, then he gives me relief. And that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, "Kilebali ha'evil menucha bebechiyam ve'oyer mavim." There is a certain menucha in their expressions of crying and avelus. And the same thing, lahapu bali simcha. Find it's a difficult. A person, it's like when you have a kid who's all excited by going on a trip. Every parent knows that from the time he's told he's going to trip, till the trip itself, the kid becomes kind of impossible. Because the kid is very excited, but there's no way to express his excitement. So smacking his younger brother on the head might be one way of expressing it, and getting in the way of something else, another way of expressing it. It's just that they need a way to express it. And that's why he puts both simcha and avelus lahavu. A Kodesh Baruch Hu gives expressions, because that is normal human life.
Maybe.
Yes.
What about when somebody's avelus is cut short by, like, chag?
So, we have to understand it in the context of things superseding avelus, that at the end of the day, there's a bigger picture, and a person is expected to live up to it. Can he not do it? If he's an onus and he cries. I mean, only great people really work ki'ilu not. I mean, you know, there's stories about Dal Sabatka, stories about the Pisatsana, stories about this. Those are extraordinary. But the Torah gave an order of what can supersede. It's like the Marshal give us sort of a dimion a little bit. The Gemara, it says in Chazal that Noelot ben Zochen is Abkam Shbach Hatchila. If somebody lost somebody, and then a child is born, like during the Shiva and you name me afterwards, there's a certain sense of comfort in that, in the fact that something is kind of, some simchas overcoming it. I would assume it's of a similar nature. A person is supposed to be able to live up to the fact that the yontif is, you know, the simcha of the yontif is overwhelming the avelus, and I don't have any other terrors for it. Koryadato, shabala begayusa. You also know that he lived with her when she was a guy. V'chein kol ha'shloshim yom shetachti utas v'heset, in 30 days she is still a guy, v'afil avodah zara. V'l'yachkola b'emuna kol ha'zman ahu, v'imzeh. So the person, so for 30 days she's still over the Zara and does what she, you know, she's still involved in the previous religion. V'imzeh, v'lo yashiveno chukei ha'tayreh. If he doesn't succeed in converting her, use her as a slave. And the Rambam explains a very profound idea. Hine shamra teira kirvas hamishkol. V'afi b'shti b'ktas meri, v'tzen loy ma'yis az goya. V'imza amalit is amibot ha'sash anisa. The Rambam says, there's certain mida teiva. Living with a woman is a bond. It obligates a certain element of thoughtfulness about the other person, about the relation with the other person. So this person was not Jewish. You were be'etzem doing something wrong, which the Torah only b'di'evad was matir simply because they didn't feel you could do it. And yet the Torah said, having lived with a woman, there's a certain element of menschlicher conduct towards her that obligates you. You can't take a person that you lived as a man and a wife, as a man and a woman, and make her into a slave or into property. That's the way the Rambam pointed. And that's the Musaf to learn from it. It's very profound. In other words, we need to treat that type of relationship with the midas that it deserves. Having lived with a person is a certain profound human bond, and it obligates you to live up to it. And we know it wasn't right, we know the issues, but you can't then go ahead and be an animal and so on. Okay, the next one is Rabbi Nebuchaya. It's very interesting, by the way, just as a side point, the Rambam in Mor Nebuchim also, when it comes to the story of Yehuda and Tamar, he also explains it in a similar way. The Torah is teaching us Midas Tovos, even in situations that are on the compromising side and not ideal. He explains that he owed Tamar the money because he used the services, and halachically he explains it's binding. So, despite the Torah is teaching us that Yehuda, despite the fact that he was in a very, very uncomfortable position, needed to do what was right. And one doesn't take away from the other. You can't excuse your Ben Adam Chavero needs based on the same Shemayim needs. I just want to give examples of human tragedies, and one that I know personally, sort of. I know one part of it. You have sometimes a case, this happened quite a long time ago, a few decades ago, a person, a woman, as a young girl, committed indiscretion and had a child out of wedlock. He gave up the child for adoption and was able to rebuild her life, very, very, very normal, regular, crazy woman, everything is fine and wonderful. The child, 20 years down the pike, discovered who his mother is, and he wants to come back to his mother, wants to see a mother, know a mother. For her, it would, certainly emotionally, but maybe even practically, destroy her new life. And here you have a real tug of war between, you know, you had a child, on the other hand, should you break up? I mean, no, there will certainly, it will certainly impact her family in many, many ways. I don't know. No, those are things that are not easy to, the person made a clean break, and the person, you know, really put a life together, and so on. I don't know. Those are things that are kind of the most difficult. Like somebody once said, Ben Adam Chaver Shalos are the most difficult ones because you can't be machmir. There's no way to be machmir on it. Every chumra is a kula of the other side. Okay. The next one is a Rabbi Nebuchaya, and he speaks about the Sora Mora. So he brings the pasuk of Mu'kan Sheiro, and they were machriz on him that Bezin Pleni Sakras Pleni Meshav Sora Mora. Omra Zal, Ki Din Zeshal Sora Mora Lo Irma Olam. Chazal said the Sora Mora never ever happened. V'hu Shetinzepek Ben Sora Mora, Tanya Ben Sora Mora V'Yonadach V'Hoy V'Lasid Liyos V'Lom Anichtevu Dreshu Kal Zchav. These are two parashas that are written for Joy Shukav Oschar. Vim came. So the Rabbi Nebuchaya asked this question. Vim came, he said, if Vim Mahu Tzuch HaTeo Lo Di Av Lichto, Ma Shaloi Hoya, Ma Sha'in In Yon Anoi B'Derech Olo. There's enough, believe me, there's enough Torah to learn without Perik B'Sar Amor and Irani Dachas. So what's the... Like, what's the point of it? Why would we have that parasha in the Torah? Joy Shekabos Chatz Kilu, that we don't have really much to learn, so we have a piece that's not Nogea. Why would the Torah deal with something that's not Nogea? V'im kei yishuzo v'im ma'atzuch otel lo deal lichtem ha'shloi hoyo ma'sha'in yon anog v'derech holo. So, avol zeh hoyo mechokmas ha'Torah Lelami das es ha'om begodl chivas Hashem Yisbarach. Shrei ein lecha av ha'chazaka ba'olam kavas ha'eim av ve'eim leben. So, he says that the Torah is telling us, that the Torah found a way to teach us the what is the level of avas Hashem. In other words, what he's saying is as follows. A person has the Torah itself, besides, it's a two-way street. The Torah tells us how to act. The Torah also needs to teach us principles. How strongly is a person supposed to be misyaches to Ruchnias, Takarish Baruch, and so on. So the Torah gives us a halacha, which is true on the theoretical level. In other words, this would be the appropriate behavior if a situation like that ever came about. The fact that it's not going to come about, but it does give us the principle most accurately. It's like sometimes when you're trying to explain something, you pick sometimes a muscle that is extreme in a way that it's not going to, didn't happen, but it just ideally points out the principle that you're trying to explain. So the Torah said, I need to teach you something about Avos Hashem. There is no more powerful love, the love of a father and mother for a child. The kibush ben oivos Hashem yisala, v'zedar ko keselo, chayom aleim shetigbalem avos bach avos aben. If the person, is, if the child is over the mitzvahs, and he's going in a derech that's wrong, the chayiv to that the avos Hashem should be bigger. Actually, it's torah kol oivos Hashem avos aben skill. They themselves will bring him for skill to besen. Now, I want to explain, so I want to be able to put this in terms that's easier to cope with. We imagine this, in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like another, a quote-unquote, being, person in our lives, and we've got to choose, you know, we're going to marry A or B or C or D, and we are, quote-unquote, married to our children, we love our children immensely. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, it's either him or me, and we say, okay, it's got to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, that type of love, if we picture it that way, the problem would be that that's very, very mean of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to put us in a dilemma like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu infuses us with the most tremendous love for our children, and then with the love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's very hard. So why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu playing that way with us? So let's try to picture a little bit differently, and we'll get the point of it. Let's say we have parents whose child, God forbid, is a murderer. And the parents know about it, and they can turn him into the police, and that way prevent him from killing people, and they don't. And when they're confronted, they say, oh, we love our child so much, you don't expect us to love the police more than we love him, or whatever, or the people that he's killing, we don't love more than him. So the choice is, are we going to give him into the police and then kill him? Or are we going to, and Yankov's life will be saved? Or will Yankov be killed if my son's life will be saved? No brainer. No, the answer here is, a person should love his child more than anybody or anything else in the world, except for what's right, what's tov. Him killing innocent people, it's not a choice. If you have money for a medical procedure, you certainly give it to your child and not to the stranger. But if your child is killing somebody else who's innocent, then it's murder versus your child. It's not, it's the love of murder, the love of goodness, the what's right. And every so often you read about parents who turn into their children, and we tend to admire them because we understand that there are things that supersede that love to a child doesn't supersede tov, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said in the Sarah Mara, here's a child that's bent on a destructive path that will harm people, like it says he's eventually going to kill people. So at that point, that's the Ava of Hashem. The Ava of Hashem is the Ava of the tov that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put into the Bria, and that's what we're supposed to like, and so on. Then he says, that's really what the Pasha of Akedah about, because Avraham Avinu, even though he had a very powerful love for Yitzchak, extraordinary, I mean, you're talking about a child that came to him after giving up having children when he was old. Now, over there also, it wasn't, over there the Nisayan was really double, because at least when a person has a Ben Sarah Morah, when it's fun, so Ben Sarah Morah, I know it's wrong, and I have to struggle with my emotions. And okay, you know, we understand that. But the case of the of Avraham Avinu, it was impossible to fathom why this is the greater good. The nisayon was double. It was a nisayon of overcoming the instinctive and natural love to a child, and a nisayon of, well, why would a good God want me just to sacrifice my child for him? I mean, he did no wrong, he's great, he's fantastic. So that was a double nisayon, and Avraham not only had to overcome emotion, he had to trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants is Tov and Emes. That's a special nisayon. But the idea is, once again, that the most powerful instinct of a person should be able to overrule it for that which is right. And that's why it's called Avraham Oyavi. So it's not a conflict of love between two people, two entities, two this. It's between the Toiv and the child. For us, this part of Olam Goydul Chi of Avra Shem Yisrael Shuroi L'Avra Bekol Mini Avra. That's why, and then it became clear what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. U'mizeh Amru Droish V'Kal V'Schar. And that's why, and on that they said Droish V'Kal V'Schar. In other words, we're meant to learn the Parsha and use it as a template for activities in other areas that require a tremendous sacrifices. A person likes his career, his reputation, the goods that he possesses, the societies, and there are many things that a person is attached to, and for doing what's right, a person should be prepared to leave a society, to be shunned by a society, and so on and so forth. And then the Rebbe Nachai says, Kach shamati mipi harav rash meir shiche. His Rebbe, the Rash, was a Rashba. So this is a Rashba. It's a Rashba on Chumash, telling us, giving us an understanding of the Joyce Kavaskar. I want to add another angle of Hezba. It's sort of included what he says, just give it a little bit of different muscle, and we'll be able to understand it. In secular knowledge, we have a hierarchy of a hierarchy of science that works as follows. You have math, and then you have physics. Everything that appears in physics can be expressed in a mathematical algorithm or formula. If it can't, we've got some real problems, because that means that the thing itself, it has no cause-effect correlation, and that, as far as we're concerned, doesn't exist. So everything in the world of physics can be expressed in a mathematical equation. Sometimes we don't figure out right away, but it has to be that way. The flip side is not true. Not everything in mathematics can be expressed in physics. For instance, you have something like the square root of minus 1, I. I doesn't exist. In the world of math, it certainly exists. You don't have a complete system without I, and it's very, very, very valuable. It's very important, and it's definitely part of a big picture. It's part of the quadrants. It's part of a lot of things. But there is nothing in the world physically, to the best of my limited knowledge, that is a square root of minus one by existence. It's you use it in different forms, but it's not something that has any meaning. Minus things don't have square roots, and yet it exists. So so here we see that there's a hierarchy from the conceptual to the practical. The practical is always less than the conceptual, and therefore there will be much in concept that will not necessarily find a practical expression. The Torah and mitzvahs have that same relationship. Mitzvahs are the description of a locus in the physical world, things, objects that exist, lulav and shayfer and tzitzis and tefillin, etc., and bris milah and so on and so forth. Every part of mitzvahs has a Torah to it. It's halacha, what it's accomplishing on the mitzvah yonis, what the meaning behind it, how it integrates other mitzvahs. There's the whole Torah exists behind every mitzvah. So every mitzvah has a Torah by definition, because the mitzvahs are the bottom line of Torah. But not every part of Torah has a mitzvah. There are halakim of Torah that, for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose not to express, the way that in math, not every element that is true and sort of has existence in the math has existence in the physics, in the practical world. That's the Metzius. So this chelik of Torah is droish v'kalos char. In other words, there's no lasos. The schar lies just in the lulmod. Other inyanim, you need to both lulmod and lasos. This is something which is lulmod alamed. There is no lasos to it. So droish v'kalos char means, it doesn't mean to say, well, it's purpose. Its purpose is because this is an integral part of Torah. A shas without Ben Sora Mora, without the sugyas of Eir Nidachas, is not shas. It's missing, and there are going to be a lot of edges. Not only in copied these halachas, but other halachas. Certainly mitzad the pnimius and yanim, but these are elements that have not been given any mitzias in this world. And then Rabbi Chai says, "Mashin tesham amar biyachni yeshafta kibush b'sara mora." So Rabbi Yechon said, I sat at the cave of a Betzara Mora. Efsa, the polygav Raisa, maybe he's cholik on the Raisa and holds that it does exist. I said, Mohad Rabbi Yechon, I Betzara Mora Gama, Alekinya Absalom. Alekinya Betzara Mora Gama, Gidin Torah Shem Yoskila. It could be he meant was a person that Mitzad is on Hagar, I would deem to be Betzara Mora, but not somebody that I not the halachic Betzara Mora, but somebody who, you know, a child who was a terrible child like Avshalom and so on and so forth. Let's take a look also, there's a Sfarnu here. The Sfarnu says like this, Lo solo nivloso ala eis, ki kavad yad v'yamahu. You're not allowed to leave a body on a tree. It says, ki kilas Elohim toli. You have a it's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, well, it says Elokim, Klola, it's as if you're hanging a terrible, terrible bizoyan of Tzuras Elokim. So Rashi learns, because Adam is Selma, Kim, and so on, it's found a little bit differently. Hine, Kol Etzem Nivdal Michome Yikar Elohim. Anything that is not physical, any entity that is beyond the physical is called Elohim. Like we've seen Elohim also Kalel, Elohim, and so on. Umizeh min hu etzem hanefesh hasichas badam hanikatzam Elohim. The nefesh in a person, the chelik of a person, Hashem, is called Elohim because that is its metzias. It is something which is above physical palpability and reality. When Shaul came in and he asked the Balas Ov to bring up, to conjure up Shmuel, she said, I saw Elohim coming up, means the Neshamas. When you embarrass a person who is living, there's a physical involvement in it. Turns red, turns white, and so on. But since the Bizoin is for the Nefesh HaSichlis, Ashi etzem nivdal, hanishach hamisus aguf. It is what's left over after misaguf. Omesh u'kilas lehim. That's why it's called kilas lehim. Ki alonas hatliya leguf hameis bilti kvura. Leaving over a body without burying it, he bizoyin la'isa etzem anitzchei adikah lehim. It's a bizoyin for that eternal entity that's called the lehim. So the Sfarna is saying that the covered hamase that was so makbid on is because as long as the person is living, there's an interface of the physical, and the busha and the kavod goes to that interface, so it's kind of less than after Misa, where the person is completely kol kulei bara lakim, and that's why it's a bizayin to the nefesh completely, and that's why there's such a zehiras in the kavod ha'mes and so on. Okay.